Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Democrat gubernatorial candidate Ed Fitzgerald has a running mate and perhaps a primary race this spring. Joining us today to talk about that and more, Chrissy Thompson, state capitol reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Thanks for joining us, Chrissy.
Thanks for having me.
And also joining us, Julie Carr Smythe, correspondent for the Associated Press. Welcome back, Julie.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So, Democrat Ed Fitzgerald staged the announcement of his running mate at the headquarters, right, of Ohio Planned Parenthood. Am I right about that?
No, he actually announced his running mate down in Dayton on
Saturday. Dayton. Okay.
Which is interesting that you got confused on that because it was very confusing. He let the name of his running mate sort of leak out on a Friday.
Okay.
Announced it on a weekend. And then their big event was this Planned Parenthood endorsement last week of the entire Democratic ticket.
So do you think my confusion is was what they wanted? Did they want people that confused?
Well, to some degree, because he did have this first pass at a running mate that didn't work out. And so he is trying to maybe start fresh with a little bit of lack of scrutiny there, and not a big news day.
I have to say, in all that I read about it, I didn't see very much or only fleeting reference to the first running mate. Did he do a good job? Do you think they achieved the goal of obliterating or at least blurring the references to that, Chrissy Thompson?
Well, I think I thought about this actually when I was writing my story. How much ink do you give the Eric Kearney situation anymore? And I think, you know, it's high up in these stories saying, why does he need a second running mate? You know, this is a second running mate. And, you know, Eric Kearney had, you know, $826,000 in unpaid business taxes for his family business. But then that's not going to appear in really any more stories, I don't think. You know, we move on and maybe selecting someone, you could say it's a positive or negative, selecting someone in Sharon Neuhart that's not as high profile around the state. You know, probably the Fitzgerald campaign would have maybe wanted to have someone a little higher profile, but I'm not sure they could do that. And also, it may work out for them in that, you know, Sharon Neuhart is just in this job and we're just going to move on now. So.
Yeah.
And it also gives them a little bit of leverage in terms of the biographical background that we're going to have to do on her to introduce her to the state. So had it been someone well known, you could get in and out of that question and go straight into the background. But, you know, you do have to say, here's who she is. She's run for Congress twice and lost. She's a lawyer in Dayton and or from Yellow Springs and so forth, and particularly her positions on in favor of abortion rights and on the local board of the Planned Parenthood organization are high in our stories as well.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It is Monday, so that means it's time for our weekly reporters roundtable. My guests, Chrissy Thompson from the Cincinnati Inquirer and Julie Carr Smythe from the Associated Press. If you have a question or comment about what's going on at the State House, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you think of Ed Fitzgerald's choice for his running mate? Give us a call. Let us know. Well, so tell us about her, Sharon Neuhart. Weird spellings on both. She's run for Congress twice and lost, but they weren't exactly in Democratic strongholds.
Right. She went up against, let me remember, first was it Steve Austria? And he had been a state senator, was holding that very strong Republican district in the Dayton area. And, you know, she raised, I think, $500,000
or so. Not shabby.
Yeah, which is not shabby for that kind of a district. And then that district was part of the redistricting, and they actually drew Mike Turner, a veteran congressional representative down there, into the same district with Austria. So Austria stepped aside, and she was sort of the Democratic you know, sacrifice there in terms of both of them would have done well, but Mike Turner's quite well known down there and has been in office for a long time. So she raised a bit less money But, you know, so a race like that does allow someone to put their name out there, at least in the region. It's a region the Democrats need in the Cincinnati, Dayton, southwestern part of the state. Mm-hmm. And Ed Fitzgerald is from the Northeast. So that gives them a bit of geographic diversity.
Now, I know the Kearneys were going to be helpful in terms of fundraising. She at least was friends with the Obamas and so forth. And anyways, they're good fundraisers. Now, I think that Sharon Neuhart is supposed to be pretty good at that, too. She obviously showed up with $500,000 in the first.
Not a bad fundraiser at all. Both races, both the first congressional races, she was the third ranking Democrat in the state as far as Democratic challengers and how much money they raised. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, she definitely did not outraise either of her opponents, but she didn't do a bad job. I was talking to our Washington, D.C. reporter about it, and she said, oh, yeah, this is a really good showing. The second time she was endorsed by Emily's List, which is a national, very powerful PAC that endorses women who advocate for abortion rights and are running in races. And so if it's possible for her to bring some of that heft into this gubernatorial race when Ed Fitzgerald, being a man, would not have any chance of being endorsed by Emily's List. So that could be very helpful.
Well, Lee Fisher was endorsed by Emily's List when he was running for the U.S. Senate in the primary race against Secretary of State, former Secretary of State.
Ken Blackwell.
No. Female in the primary.
Betty Montgomery?
Democratic primary.
Oh.
What's her name? God, I feel bad.
Well, they traditionally
Jennifer
Bruner.
Oh, there
right.
we go. Sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry, they traditionally support women.
They
so.
Do. They do. They traditionally support women, but that time they broke apart. But this is for Emily's List is there for Congress, U.S. Senate. They don't endorse and they don't help fund for gubernatorial races. So it brings some name heft and some creed. But so, all right. So they're going to make a big deal about abortion rights. What are the pros and cons of that, Chrissy?
Well, you know, one thing is that the Kasich administration did sign several abortion restrictions that were in the last budget and in the previous General Assembly as well. Kasich, when you ask him about it, he says, I'm pro-life, that's all there is to it, and he really doesn't want to talk about it very much. But if they're able to show that he signed these provisions that came to his desk, this is a big win for the Republicans. You know, they really the right to life movement really talks about these a lot. If the Democrats are able to bring that into the story and say, you know, make it look as though that was what Kasich was focusing on instead of the economy, which is what people really think is important, that could be leveraged for some heft for the Democrats and some momentum.
Julie Carr-Smyth, what are some of the provisions or what are the key provisions that they'll focus on? It'll be confusing to do all of them. So
right. There's a really, it is somewhat confusing, but very important front of the list one, which is that they passed a law that said any abortion clinic in the state would have to have would be unable to get a transfer agreement with a local hospital if it was providing abortions.
That means if at the abortion clinic they required ambulatory...
Right, like if there's an emergency situation and they need to be transported to a hospital.
They need a contract.
Right. And so under Ohio law, all ambulatory facilities, whether they're providing abortions or not, have to have this transfer agreement. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a catch-22 for the abortion clinics because they have to have the agreement and the law says they can't have the agreement.
With public hospitals.
With publicly funded hospitals,
which are how many? I mean, are there...
Well, I mean, we've already had four closures around the state. Two were kind of unrelated, but two were definitely voluntary, but they had to do with the writing was on the wall that these clinics in Cleveland and Toledo their only option was a public hospital and they weren't going to get it. Now, this past week, the state has issued its first actually license revocation based on this relationship, and that's in Cincinnati. The clinic is fighting that, and so we're going to see what happens. But the NARAL pro-choice group believes there are at least two or three or four or more that might be in danger of closing it.
So in this Cincinnati clinic is Women's Med in Sharonville, and it did not have a transfer agreement before it had a waiver. There were only two ambulatory surgical facilities or outpatient surgical facilities in the whole state that had waivers, and they are both abortion clinics because there shouldn't be any problem in any other outpatient surgery center getting these sorts of patient transfer agreements. So it's the Women's Med Clinic in Cincinnati.
What did the waiver do for them?
It was granted under the Strickland administration, which said even though you don't have a hospital transfer agreement, you have doctors who are on staff at hospitals who say that they'll take responsibility for your patients if they need to come to an ER. And let's remember that that pretty much people on both sides say this is a formality. No hospital is going to turn away a patient that comes to them in an ambulance who's in need.
I don't even believe they can.
Yeah,
I mean, I think they're obligated.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the Cincinnati clinic had this waiver, and also a Women's Med clinic in Dayton also had this waiver. So a new regulation under the Kasich administration requires these clinics to go and ask again every year for these waivers. It's called a variance, right? And have that be renewed. This clinic's waiver was not renewed. The Women's Med clinic in Dayton were still waiting on a verdict on that. But this could signal that the Kasich administration is going to stop granting these waivers. And the new law that was passed causes a third clinic, Planned Parenthood in Cincinnati, to have to ask for a variance. They're not able to get a transfer agreement anymore because all of the private hospitals in Cincinnati have declined to get a transfer agreement with them.
Right. And I mean, we need to remember that those who were behind the law believe that, you know, these public hospitals are publicly funded and that money shouldn't be used in any way to support abortion because they oppose the procedure.
Is it how do we define publicly funded hospital? Are they entirely publicly funded?
Well, that's a good question because in Cincinnati, Planned Parenthood lost its transfer agreement with UC Health, which is legally
university.
That's correct. Correct, and it was it's a private hospital that was spun off of a public university. However, they believe that their relationship is so tenuous and so closely related to being public that they believe that the law prohibits them from having a transfer agreement with Planned Parenthood.
Right, and so that'll be a really interesting case to watch. I mean, they're going to challenge it through a very circuitous procedure that's going to take a long time.
It's not the courts.
Right. I think
at least at first.
They start out at, I believe, the Ohio Department of Health. They challenge the revocation, and then from there, it can get into the courts eventually.
Right. The Women's Med Clinic that was ordered to close in Cincinnati has until I have another week or so to file a challenge in the courts. And I checked this morning, they have not yet, but they do plan to do so. So.
Okay, we're talking about state government and politics right now. Democrat Ed Fitzgerald staged the announcement of his running mate over the last 3 or 4 days. Picked a cold weekend to do it, but be that as it may, Sharon Neuhart is his running mate. She's a big supporter of abortion rights. That's what we've been talking about, is what is it about the Kasich administration that would be set up as a target in the Democratic strategy? We'll continue our conversation when we return. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I have my weekly reporters roundtable. It's not as round as usual. I have two colleagues in here today, Julie Carr Smythe, correspondent for the Associated Press, and also Chrissy Thompson, state capitol reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. We're talking about the Democratic strategy to use the issue of abortion rights in the upcoming gubernatorial campaign. F. Fitzgerald, of course, is the presumptive candidate. We'll talk about a possible primary in a few minutes. But we did want to go back to the issue of abortion rights and talk about you. We were mentioning earlier that the new law requiring abortion clinics to have an agreement with a hospital, but banning them from having the agreements, ambulatory or whatever you call them, agreements, transfer agreements. They can't be with public hospitals, sort of a catch 22. Are there any other new laws that have emerged in the Kasich administration that the Democrats might target?
Yeah, there are quite a few. There is what we've been shorthanding as the defunding of Planned Parenthood, which actually puts Planned Parenthood at the back of the line for government funding, and which is an effective defunding, putting some other healthcare providers ahead of that for a limited pot of certain funding. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a law that says if you go to a rape crisis center, that rape crisis center can't advise you or recommend an abortion or refer you, I mean to say, to an abortion facility. And then there are also some requirements in terms of informed consent that doctors must allow a woman to hear the fetal heartbeat and talk about the viability of that fetus at the time she seeks an abortion. Now, it doesn't ban it, which is an interesting issue because there is this heartbeat bill still out there, which it would be a very stringent restriction. And what's interesting from the Democrats' strategic point of view is that the Republicans do not have an appetite for this heartbeat bill. I mean, it has been sitting out there for an entire session plus a year. And
well, the powers that be among Republicans don't have a appetite for it.
The former Senate President Tom Niehaus effectively killed the heartbeat bill by not allowing it to come up for a vote in his chamber after it had passed the Ohio House 2 years ago. Now, the current Senate President
Keith Faber.
Faber was in favor of the heartbeat bill, but his aides are cautioning us and just saying, he can only decide when it gets to his chamber based on what it looks like. So, read into that what you want.
Right. And that is a bill for your listeners that would ban all abortions or most abortions once a fetal heartbeat is detected, which can be very early, I'd say 6 weeks into a pregnancy.
Now, all of this represents great success for the Right to Life movement in Ohio. They've achieved a lot. Ohio is considered one of the strongest right to life states in the country. If the fetal heartbeat bill went through, it would be absolute. Do we have any sense about how Ohio Right to Life and others are going to support Kasich in this?
Definitely. They are right on top of putting out statements every time one of these passes. They are last week when the Democrats were endorsed by Planned Parenthood, they basically said they were bellying up to the trough of a very controversial issue to raise money. From the Planned
Politicians
Parenthood.
Have never done that before, have
no,
they?
No, never. they are... they're powerful in terms of their grassroots reach. They have a wide membership across the state of Ohio that they can mobilize. And they're right up there with the NRA in terms of the local chapters that they have out there.
Now, the women's vote, there's a lot at stake here. They're statistically neck and neck. I know Ed Fitzgerald trails John Kasich by one percentage point in the latest poll we know of, the Quinnipiac poll, among women, which is statistically irrelevant. They're neck and neck. So there's a lot to that's got to be why they're there digging up, this.
That's right. And again, some people will point to the Virginia governor's race where women and people who were more liberal on some of these social issues or not as conservative, I suppose, is probably the better way to say it, came out and really helped in that situation. So I think the Democrats are hoping to repeat that strategy.
And going so far as to hire on the political consultant who ran that race.
That's correct. They one of their new operatives was very very helpful in that race out there. So and you know, Mike Gonadakis, who's the president of Ohio Right to Life, says kind of, you know, bring it on. If you want this to be an issue, we will get out the vote, and we've got Ohioans who believe that this is the right thing to do, and we'll win.
Really, the main issue that I heard resonating in the press conference last week was they're going to try to make women's health issues economic issues. And as we look across the state at unemployment, underemployment, overstretched workers, I mean, a lot of those people are women. A lot of women have two jobs and a lot of men don't have any. And that's part of the economy shift that we've seen since the recession. It's rebounding somewhat. But, you know, these women who are economically strapped, if they can say, listen, you know, they've been focusing on this issue that involves your body, and instead of fixing these economic problems, that is the sense of what I think the Democrats are going to stress in this.
But Julie's right in that even just some of the words that we were hearing last week, there was only, I think, one mention, maybe two, of your body. And a lot of this is all women's health issues are between the woman and her doctor. That's kind of the new phrase that's used. The word abortion was not used, I'm pretty sure, until the gaggle at the end when we all got around you know, Fitzgerald and asked him quite a few questions. It's kind of an intense period. And yes, we made him address it because these clinics are closing, right? But
and he didn't avoid it necessarily.
He did in their planned remarks. Right. Definitely that entire press conference, they really did not, they tried not to speak about abortion and more talked about women's health.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they even emphasized, Planned Parenthood itself emphasized women's health is the largest part of what they do, and they're talking about low-income women and reaching them, and clearly are trying to steer the discussion to when we ask Dave Pepper, for example, who's running for attorney general, about sort of a track he was taking in the news conference about Mike DeWine pursuing abortion-related lawsuits around the country. You know, he said, "Well, this is going to be an important issue because he's using the resources of that office on that as opposed to other things like fighting mortgages and that kind of thing, mortgage foreclosures."
Before we move on, I just want to remind listeners that you're listening to 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests, Julie Carr-Smyth of the Associated Press and Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Inquirer, are here talking about politics and state government. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The economy. I mean, you can see how they're thinking about morphing this issue of women's health issues. They're making it an economic thing, and then coming out the other end of this campaign, come September, October, it's the economy. And how is the economy faring as far as John Kasich's administration is concerned? Julie?
I think that it, you know, things looked pretty good on Friday in terms of there was a little bump from November in unemployment, but it's down from a year ago, and we're still tracking under the national average. If I'm not mistaken, which is, you know, sort of significant because you have to look at everything in context. However, there have been a lot of large job announcements. We had this Chinese automaker come in just last week or the week before with another 700 jobs. The economists I talk to say that, you know, we're undergoing still in Ohio a huge shift in terms of moving out of the previous dependence on manufacturing and trying to reinvent this economy. So that will be probably what they focus on, you know, high tech and medical industry and military, R&D, that kind of thing. That's where the excitement is there that they'll focus on.
There was a lot of talk of the state taking a real nick when the federal government did not invest in the drone program here. That hurt.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Ohio and Indiana are now trying to move forward on that. They're trying to come up with their own plan. But yeah, we lost that bid. There have been a series of losses in terms of things we've gone for and haven't gotten. That's always the case. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the year will be spent kind of putting a lot of this in context and fact checking their claims. But I do think that it's important to look at the totals.
That's absolutely right.
Because what happens is that you see this big local story on a huge incoming job creation announcement.
1,000 jobs.
Right. Yeah. And then you find out, well, but, you know, in the scheme of things, that they're not adding up to as many. And also how much are people being paid? And that is a tricky question because of, like I say, manufacturing falling a little bit down, and those are high-paying jobs that don't require a huge amount of education all the time.
That's right. The economists will repeatedly say, when you call them to try to help, say, you know, help me cut through some of, you know, all these different claims. You know, a jobs report can come out, and without fail, you'll have four or five different messages from the people in power, which right now is the Kasich administration, saying, look, Ohio is doing so great. And that same report will contain four or five different things that the Democrats can say, that, you know, oh, we're doing terribly, right? So to say, how do you get through all this? And what they continually say is, look at the number of people who are employed. And that's the number to look at as an overall. But, and the overall economy kind of, you know, these individual job announcements don't oftentimes they don't even make a drop in the bucket and that sort of thing.
And challenger, whoever, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, can always say to the voters, which are not necessarily the people who are suffering, but the voters, Do you feel better off now than you did 4 years ago?
That's the ultimate question that, mm-hmm. that all challengers are trying to get people to ask. And that Governor Kasich will even say that's what this election is going to come down to. So he obviously feels that people think things are much better than they were in 2010.
Well, and in truth, he hasn't spent a whole bunch of time talking about abortion. He spent a lot of time talking about mm-hmm. the economy. So it'll be interesting to see how the Democrats sort of spin this. Of course, as Chrissy said at the beginning, you know, he did sign all these bills. They did come over his desk and he did make them law. And so as governor, you know, the buck stops there. And it is under his watch that these laws have been changed. Whether or not voters want that or not is going to be what we find out.
Heck, they make campaign fodder out of things that have been introduced, let alone laws that have passed around here. So, okay, so let's move on. Possible Democratic gubernatorial candidate Todd Portune said he will file with the state as a Democratic candidate for the office of governor, provided he can find a running mate and can gather the 1,000 valid signatures necessary. Let's hear what Todd Portune had to say in a recent interview with WOSU.
The High Democratic Party will decide between two individuals, both of whom believe they're the best candidate to represent the party, who the representative of the party is going to be. Either one of us is much better situated in responding to issues that are of interest to the African-American community or to working men and women. All of us are better situated to do that than the current governor is.
Todd Portune, he is Hamilton County Commissioner. Chrissy Thompson, is that what the tea leaves are telling you, that he is as well situated to run for governor as Ed Fitzgerald?
Well, as of right now, the answer would be unequivocally no. He is not as well situated to run for governor as Ed Fitzgerald. He does not have the support of nearly anyone in power in the Democratic Party. So, to get the fundraising heft and things like that, you know, he would need endorsements. He would need to win the primary. To file for the primary, he needs a running mate. He says he wants to file, but he doesn't have a running mate yet. He says he told us, we've been talking to him almost every day to try to, you know, he's from our area, right?
Sure.
He told me on Friday that he was vetting five lieutenant governor candidates now. Yesterday, he told my colleague, Sharon Coolidge, that he had one person who had said yes and another person was close to saying yes. And he's going to, you know, he's still also obviously has to pick someone is his thing. So he hasn't made a decision yet.
And
but
some of the issue here is that many of the best situated Democrats to be at the top of the ticket, if you consider the lieutenant governor at the top, are already in the race. I mean, most of the folks that were...
They're running for something else.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're running for... They've got a full slate. They've got, you know, these five statewide offices to fill. And so already we have Sharon Newhart being somewhat down on the list of top choices. And, you know, even the governor candidate himself was not really one of the superstars, such as a Rich Cordray or a Jennifer Bruner or someone like that, or Ted Strickland, who stepped out, Tim Ryan stepped out, all the several sitting congressional, not losing congressional candidates. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that his timing, Todd Purtune's timing was pretty good if he wanted to sort of throw up his arms and say, hey, if you guys want an alternative to Ed Fitzgerald, if you really think he screwed up that Eric Kearney thing and that his campaign is flailing and that he doesn't have as much money as John Patrick Carney, you know, and you're leading your ticket, I'm here. And nobody took the bait. I mean, basically, he doesn't, like Chrissy says, he doesn't have any fundraising. He's been kind of criticized by the Democratic Party chairman and told to just go away.
There was a timing thing there. It looked, I mean, as far when Kearney fell off the ticket, but it's been how many weeks now since that Todd Purtune has
that
put it out there?
Mid-December, right?
So it's...
We're going on more than a month, for sure.
Right.
As far as I can remember, mid-December, yes.
And he hasn't really been, you know, if you want to say... You have to have a party structure in order to run,
yeah.
Which, good or ill, I think you do have to say that. I mean, I've done a lot of talking with the Tea Party folks who were trying to mount a challenger to Kasich, you know, and without that kind of structure, it's very difficult to gather crowds and get money and get that support that you need.
And even, I mean, let's just talk logistically. To file for governor, you need 1,000 signatures, and you need to gather probably at least 50% more than that just so that you can get all of your signatures certified. There is a kind of a process that goes through that. He has 10 days, including today and the day that they're due at 4 p.m. So that's kind of tight, right? He has 10 days
I'd say so.
to gather those signatures, and he can't even start until he appoints a lieutenant governor.
Okay. He can't start till he appoints a lieutenant governor.
Right.
Okay. Interesting.
It has to be simultaneous.
Of course. You have to know what you're signing up for.
That's right.
Right. We are talking about state government and politics with Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Enquirer and Julie Carr-Smythe of the Associated Press. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about state government and politics today with Julie Carr-Smythe of the Associated Press and Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Enquirer. We've been talking about the governor's race in detail, about the big issues that will and have emerged, abortion rights and, of course, the economy, jobs, you name it. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Laura Bischoff of the Dayton Daily News has a story that came out over the weekend, I guess, that looks at the relationship between the Attorney General's office and campaign finances involving attorneys that have applied for special counsel jobs with the Attorney General's office. Can you tell us a little bit more, Chrissy Thompson?
Yeah. So in 2010, Mike DeWine made a personal loan from him from his own personal finances to his campaign of $2 million. And he said at the time that he was not planning on forgiving that loan. That's pretty typical that politicians will just use their own money to fund their campaigns. But he was planning on having the campaign pay himself back. And since that time, he has his campaign has paid back $1.65 million of that. And a lot of that, it looks like that Laura and Jackie Borchardt, her former colleague, who's now at the Cleveland Plain Dealer, helped with the story also. It looks like they put things together and found that $1.3 million of that money had come from law firms seeking to represent the state. This money went to the GOP, to DeWine's campaign himself, and to his son's campaign for Hamilton County appellate judge. And a lot of that money, there are campaign contribution limits that you can kind of avoid. You're not supposed to, but you can if you give it to the political party itself. So a lot of
because the party can give the candidate as much money as they want.
So a lot of that money went to the Ohio Republican Party, and about $1 million of that money was funneled back into the DeWine campaign to help pay back that personal loan. So that's where they connected the numbers raising the question about pay to play for this sort of thing.
Back in 89-90, that was a big issue for Attorney General Tony Celebrezze. And I think it was the Dayton Daily News that broke the story that time, too, about the same kind of problem. Mm-hmm. So, Julie, what do you make of it? He's up for re-election.
Right. it's just typical at this time that you would see, you would see the attorneys that are going to be ponying up for the attorney general. You're going to watch the banks ponying up for the treasurer. And it's valuable to be able to look at how the cash is flowing in. I didn't see in the story how many of those lawyers actually got that money. They mm-hmm. they used the phrasing seeking the employment.
Right.
So I think that would be the sort of the...
Well, what would the ethics violation be? That you're not supposed to take funds from even firms that are seeking employment?
You're not supposed to show a direct line with a bid.
Right.
Okay.
So if
timing
you,
has a role.
Yeah.
In this
so thing. There was one instance that they said in the story where they raised one particular issue on a specific firm, and I didn't write down the name of the firm, but that had gotten some state work or put in a bid, and that day made several contributions to, I believe, the Republican Party, which that money was, kind of included in the money that was shuffled on to DeWine's campaign. And the Attorney General's office did say, we can't believe that they did this, and they did put a moratorium on bids from that specific firm. So that was one instance where there was a line drawn. But these are obviously there are dozens of firms included in their investigation that they're saying it just raises the question, right, about whether this is a pay to play type of a thing.
Right. Right.
Okay. And Chrissy, you wrote recently that the next few months are critical if Ohioans want to change the state's system of drawing legislative district lines. Leaders in both parties seem to agree. But will anything happen?
Yeah, that's the question, right? So John Husted, who's our Secretary of State, he's a Republican, and Vernon Sykes, who until last week was co-chair of the Constitutional Modernization Commission, both agree that they think that the Constitutional Modernization Commission, which is this group that was set up to make some recommendations to the legislature on things like redistricting, are months away from making a decision, and this should give us enough time to get this on the ballot in November. This would be a constitutional change, and so the legislature would need to pass anything related to that by August 6th. However, the man who is arguably the most important in this is Speaker Batchelder, and Bill Batchelder says that he's really not sure how close we are or whether the solution is going to be the right one, or, you know, just the timing. When I brought up this issue of timing, he said, well, geez, I don't know about that, you know. And he's the one who needs to bring it to a vote. And if it doesn't arrive before they're on summer break, he would have to call the legislature back. So I really am not sure if this August 6th deadline is realistic, given Bill Batchelder's question mark. But the Senate would be on board, one would think, because the plan that they're coming up with, it appears to line up almost exactly with what the Senate passed in a 32-1 vote in the last General Assembly. So,
of course, what we often see with these redistricting debates is that, you know, there has to be a certain will to change a system that you're in control of. While you're in control, and you don't know how long you're going
to
be in control.
And change it to a system that may not benefit you or be advantageous in the future.
That's right. All the solutions that they're looking at would involve a minority vote approving the legislative redistricting, and it would make the process the same for congressional redistricting also.
Yeah, I mean, it's a leap of faith, right? Because you say, I believe in democracy, and I want this to be more fair, and but gosh darn it, you know, right now I control all branches of Ohio government.
And the Democrats 4 years ago did not take the leap.
Indeed.
They
right.
thought, gosh darn it, we've mm-hmm. got the guy in the Attorney General's office. We've got the governor. They didn't have the auditor. But
they had three of the five seats they had the majority in the House.
That's
the
right.
Ohio House.
So but they didn't. It was too much right. to risk. Mm-hmm. And so what are the chances the Republicans, now that they control everything, will do it?
So experts are telling me that there's probably a 2 to 3 year window. I mean, and politicians all agree, because after we start angling for the 2018 election, then whoever wins that will have, again, control of the current process. So Husted says it's OK if it doesn't pass this year. The citizens are just going to lose it and they're going to rise up, and there's going to be an outside group that is going to get something on the
really?
Ballot. But that hasn't happened yet, that a nonpartisan group has tried to get something on the ballot. So I don't know.
This stuff's pretty technical. You know, the how we pick legislative districts, it's a mess when they go in there and start to do it, although people say computers could do it.
Right. And they are finding, they had a contest this last
right.
time and had citizen groups come out. And
an organization did that. Right. It was Progress Ohio, I think. Or
right. One of those, Citizen mm-hmm. Action.
Yes. Citizen.
But they, you know, they do come up with really elegantly straight lines that, you know, look nothing like the current map, and they just really don't fly. But I mean, there are computer programs now that you can take down to the precinct level and probably down to this house number level and mm-hmm. try to figure out a way to make each district even.
Sure. I mean, the question is, if any ballot campaign were to go out to the voter that was not from the legislature, if it comes from the legislature, presumably no one's going to fight it, right? The Democrats want it to pass right now because they're not in power, and the Republicans would have agreed to it by passing it out of the legislature. So if it were to come from the citizens, there would really have to be people from both sides who said, look, you know, our legislature doesn't look like Ohio, you know, and there's lots of examples where you could give for that. But, you know, whether there will be, they would basically have to have no opposition in order to get it passed.
Well, give us an example of how the legislature doesn't look like Ohio.
So just talking about the Ohio House, looking right now, there's a couple different numbers we can look at just to start with. So the in 2012, in the Ohio House, there was a slight majority of the votes cast across the state went to Democrats. And instead, we ended up with a 60-39 GOP majority. Now, if you took out all of the uncontested seats, because more of those were Democrats running, mm-hmm. it would still only be a 51% GOP majority. And to end up with a supermajority, you know, veto-proof, there's nothing that Democrats have zero power in the Ohio House of Representatives. Mm-hmm. You know, it's experts will say that's not the only thing you should look at. But when you bring those numbers up, they say, well, for sure, something's wrong.
So in other words, if that's making sense to folks, that if you look at every individual race and how many votes were cast and by whom or by which party, you
that's
know,
right.
and you add those up, a majority were Democrats, but the supermajority is Republicans.
That's right. That's the way a majority of voters voted for Democrats, but it translated because of our districts and where we mm-hmm. kind of have put people together mm-hmm. into a massive GOP majority. So that tells you that those districts were drawn in such a way to protect that majority.
And the Secretary of State, John Husted, favors changing the system. And he's our chief elections.
That's right.
Head of elections for the state of Ohio.
The interesting thing is that he
was a Republican
on the commission that mm-hmm. drew the districts mm-hmm. that are in place right now. So I asked him about that. And he said, well, look, the problem is with the system. I'm a conservative. If I'm in charge, of course I'm going to draw the lines to favor my party. And I even said to him, well, you could have voted no. And he said, well, they would have outruled me anyway. So anyway, be that as it may.
But he is right to the extent that you're going to expect those to defend, if you will, their own party.
That's
if
right.
they can. If they
That's
can.
Right. I mean, the
Although,
Democrats did the
I'd
same
I'd like thing. To think that, no, that shouldn't be an expectation. Why can't you go in there and be objective like all of us great journalists out here and do what's right?
Yeah. Well,
on that note,
couldn't they vote
2 to 3 years
on something that was more fair?
2 to 3 years. What a concept. 2 to 3 years or we go another decade.
That's right.
Pretty much.
That's right. And so I would also like to point out that the proposal that they are looking at won't solve all of our problems. The consensus is forming around requiring some sort of minority approval to the current process. However, you know, some people say, well, we shouldn't have sitting legislators drawing their own districts. What if you get a Democrat on the panel who agrees to vote yes because his district looks or her district looks really great? And, that happens all the time in systems around the country. So some people say that we should have, you know, non-sitting legislators. That's
mm-hmm.
right. And there's a couple of other different options. So California has a system like that, not perfect, but a lot better, people would say. Washington State, I believe, has a system where it's two people from each party. So there can't be a majority, right? They are able to mostly just protect incumbents with that system. But so that's another issue is that will they just all agree just to protect incumbents and not really put up a choice, so to speak? So
we have an email from John. Take a step back real quick here. Does potential Democratic gubernatorial candidate Todd Portune have a record of being a Democrat in name only? Is he on the conservative side of Democrats? Any sense about that?
So I'm relatively new to this instant. To covering Cincinnati issues. I was in Michigan last year. So, however, he is definitely recognized as a Democrat in Hamilton County. He's been on the Hamilton County Commission for a really long time, and that's a very impressive thing to do in a county that has traditionally leaned Republican.
So,
there's a few controversial issues that he's over the years, but they've been mostly county issues, mm-hmm. like selling hospitals, I believe, was one of the issue things like that. So, so on issues that are traditionally very, social issues, I'm not mm-hmm. sure that he's had to really take much of a stance. But he is very, very aligned with the African American community. So that would be one way where I could say
right. And that was one of the things that he kicked off his campaign with was that he felt that the Fitzgerald campaign or Ed Fitzgerald. Particularly had not been particularly open and communicative
and
with
since then
African-Americans. Well, I heard on your clip that you played at the start here that he definitely mentioned both of us would be better for African-Americans than John Kasich.
Right.
So he's backpedaling somewhat on that.
Yeah, I think that remark was probably, we could probably say objectively hurt him, that email that he sent up saying that Fitzgerald was
making it a race issue.
Yeah, I think some of his supporters basically called him out and said, I think this was uncalled for, which, one could say if he had any momentum at that point that he might have lost some of it. So,
well, interestingly, he, Fitzgerald had gotten Marsha Fudge involved in an African-American congresswoman up there to help get Eric Kearney on the ticket, who was black. So, you know, it was a rash, perhaps, but maybe timely.
Okay, that's it for today. Julie Carr-Smythe of the Associated Press, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And also Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Enquirer, thanks to you.
Always a pleasure, thanks.
And to everybody else out there, thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.